Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and Life Coach Joel Elston here. Today is Thursday, November the 29th, 2018. It is 8 a.m. New York time, 5 a.m. Los Angeles time. That is 1 p.m. London time. And if you're in Sydney, Australia, it is 12 midnight. So thank you for listening at this crazy hour of the day. But welcome to Thursday morning with Joel and Walt. And Joel, it's been a couple weeks since we talked. I hope you had a fabulous Thanksgiving.
Well, as I've said before, Thanksgiving is a little redundant in our household, but it really was great. We went down to Charlotte, spent time with some friends, and really had a good time. It was really good to get down there, really good to get back. Holidays for so many people are stressful, and I tend to function best in just that same in a good rhythm and structure, and so. Well, I enjoy the holidays. I also enjoy them ending as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, that's a good thing. Very good. And we are kind of doing a little bit of an experiment today because normally we come up with a topic at like the last minute and then discuss that topic. But today we're just going to say we're Thursday morning with Joel and Walt, and we're going to see where it goes. And I do have something to start off with, so it's not like we have nothing to go on. But as usual, we are live streaming to the Facebook Law of Attraction Changed My Life group. So if anyone is listening live there, feel free to chime in the comment section with questions or comments or whatever, and we'll incorporate what we're seeing there into the podcast today. I have been receiving more and more input, Joel, from listeners, and we've been asking for input, perfectly honest. But people have been writing in and telling us how much they like the show and asking questions and so forth. And so I figured I would start off with a couple of those today to get the ball rolling, so to speak, and get you in your coaching gear, because the first one I'm going to bring in is an actual question on how to do the Law of Attraction. So if you're ready, let's get into it.
Okay, let's do it.
We have a listener named Mira who just has a very simple, straightforward question. How to heal myopia or astigmatism with the Law of Attraction? Want to take a swing at that one?
Heal her what? You broke up on me a little bit.
Oh, I'm sorry. Myopia and astigmatism.
Well, the concept of any healing process, Dr. Joe DiPenza wrote a book called You Are the Placebo, where he describes how he healed a very traumatic back injury with his mind. And that fascinated me. So I do believe we start with the concept of, can you do that? And I believe absolutely, yes, it can be healed with the Law of Attraction and the process of thought. And then to get into how that takes place, it applies the same way as whether you're healing your finances or you're healing. It's a belief system. It's a belief that you are already healed. The ability to Rhonda Byrne speaks of this in The Secret a lot. She, in one section when she's referring to, while this is going on, she's a middle-aged woman, her eyesight, her reading ability, up close as most of us get, in middle age where you need reading glasses. She decides she wants to heal herself from needing reading glasses. And, someone goes into detail explaining to her how that's impossible. And she said, please don't tell me why it's impossible, because I'm just going to make it possible. And she did. And she claimed that she put down her reading glasses and didn't need them anymore.
Wow.
And so that belief of I can do this is where it begins. But as with anything with the Law of Attraction, where it goes, I almost need, when I'm doing these type things, and by the way, sorry for the disclaimer, but just, we always have to throw this out here. I'm not a doctor.
Right.
I always recommend speaking with a medical doctor and following their directions, but I can share experiences what I've seen people do and what I've been through. And one of the things that I witnessed, someone do with an eye issue before, it was specifically cataracts, but it doesn't really matter what the eye thing is. But what this person did, needing a conduit to help the Law of Attraction come along, they used castor oil, organic castor oil, and they would put two drops of castor oil in their eyes every night before they go, and then they would envision healing. And these were moderate cataracts that were going to need surgery. And with the concept of, and I'll explain why that matters, why the oil matters, but they started visualizing that the cataracts were healing. And within two months, they said that they no longer had cataracts and it didn't need to be taken care of anymore with surgery. And so I find it baffling that a castor oil, these are the old organic remedies,
right.
Was it the castor oil that healed, or was it the internal thought of healing that healed? And the point is, yes. The answer is yes. It's both. Because the belief allows that to happen. The body heals. It has that ability to internally. I've seen people, again, not, you know, you always follow your doctor, and I'm just some guy on the radio, but stuff I've witnessed, I find fascinating that even the most huge, the biggest opponents of the law of attraction concepts, or a lot of medical scientists as they refer to themselves, even they will admit a patient's attitude toward healing matters.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes a great difference. I had, time escapes me, but I think it was roughly 2010.
Mm-hmm.
I had my gallbladder taken out. It was something that, you know, my family tended to have, and it wasn't a shock. I needed to have it taken out. So I was at work. I was working for a treatment center at the time, and it was noon on a Friday. I'll never rule before noon. And I truly said, okay, I'd used my law of attraction. That pain was not getting any better. And so I needed that gallbladder removed. So I went to but it had a great attitude. I knew I'd be fine.
Mm-hmm.
So I go to the hospital. They looked at the x-ray and said, oh yes, your gallbladder's full of stones. We need to have it removed immediately. So they got me into surgery pretty quickly. By 1:30 p.m., I was in surgery. At 2:30, pretty simple surgery. At 2:30, I was out. I had told the doctor I'm ready to go, and he laughed. He said, no, you're going to be here through the weekend. I said, I'm good to go. I said, what can I prove to you? He said, you need to be able to walk around the entire floor before you can leave. And I put on my shoes, and within, I walked around the entire floor. And he said, okay, I didn't see that coming, but you can't leave. Finally, about 6 p.m., he said, just go home, because I kept bugging. He said, just go home. And I go home. He gave me a script for pain medication. I did not need the pain medication. Now, I'm not trying to say it didn't hurt, but I chose not to take it. I have a different perspective of pain. And I was good. And I did a normal healing over time, and it got better. Ironically, at the same time, another man a couple of years older than I was admitted to the hospital within hours of me with the same problem. And when I went back, I left my phone charger and I went back on Monday to get my phone charger, and he was still in the hospital. And he had the same surgery I did. It was declared success the same way it was, but he was stuck in his pain. He was stuck in the concept of it. Wow, this is taking forever. So I'm going all the way back around to our original question. How we view everything determines its outcome in our life. That's the power we give it.
Yes.
So the healing process begins with something, you know, like I said, the castor oil eye drops. I don't know if they healed the cataracts or the thought of healing the cataracts healed them, but I know they were healed.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes you need something to that. You know, you need to add something so you can make it work. There's a study that's showing great promise right now, Walt, that everybody, you and I have talked about the subject multiple times over the years, but the placebo effect. And there's a study taking place right now, and I don't even know if I have permission to share the concept of the study, but I'll share it loosely. Instead of trying to rule out the placebo effect, they're trying to create the placebo effect, and they're studying the placebo effect.
Oh, cool.
And they're finding the placebo effect is actually more effective at the early stage of the study, and I believe that'll continue, then the majority of the medication that so instead of doing it the other way and counting out the placebo effect, they're doing the study of the placebo effect And doctors that are prescribing sugar pills for benign conditions, they're finding great success. They're finding huge success in that.
Absolutely fantastic.
That's exciting to me. So, yeah. So when you look at this, once somebody does it, once, and the reason this is relevant as well, because it adds to the belief system, but, I'm sure my listeners will check us. So I'll get broad on the dates, but in 1960-ish, somewhere in that part of the time, Roger Bannister broke the 4-minute mile.
1954, I believe. Or 52.
Thank you very much.
Yes. You're welcome. That's what I'm here for, to correct you and to show you where you've gone wrong. No, I'm sorry.
Thank you. I appreciate it. So he breaks the 4-minute mile. And for our listeners today, our younger listeners would be like, okay, well, that's just not that big of a deal. Well, at the time, there was no bigger deal. It was deemed impossible to break the 4-minute mile. In recorded history, it had never been done.
That's right.
And people were getting 4 minutes. In fact, like 6 people got 4 minutes in 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody could get rid of that last second. It was just deemed impossible. People were running what they called the perfect mile, and it was just 4 minutes and 1 second. He barely broke it by by maybe a second. I forget what the number was. 14 people broke it within 2 weeks of him breaking it.
Right.
Now, did those 14 people get better? Or did they just believe it could be done at that point?
Yeah.
And now, I mean, I think it's 350 something. I mean, it's way down below where it's at.
Oh yeah.
And it keeps getting lower because the people believe it. So it's the same thing with any milestone. When you know it can be done, and then that's an option, then your body produces any chemical or any medication that a pharmacy can produce. In fact, they derive it from the body is how they create antibodies are in your body. That's they're already existing.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to be able to be in the healing mindset. You got to be able to feed your body correctly. You got to be in a belief system that is, you can't go in and go, okay, well, I really believe my eyes are healed, and they're not. It doesn't work that way. It's not only believing that it has happened. It is going beyond that. It's living as if this has already happened and taking steps to do that. I would research for any specific condition what natural supports are there for any type of eye condition and add to those, like I was talking with the castor oil drops.
Right. Okay?
You put them in there, and there's an acid in the castor oil bean that is very mild, and it doesn't hurt eye tissue. It actually supports other eye function as well, but it's just enough to get the cataract off or other solutions.
Mm-hmm.
And so look at all that and then sort of use your potion that you create and believe that that's healing. And literally Dr. DePinzi in his book speaks of laying in bed and visualizing his back healing. He would literally name the chemicals that are going to the body, to the spine, and rebuilding, and to me, that is the most fascinating documented case where someone healed with their brain.
Yeah.
And something that he didn't need his spine fused, as every medical professional that he encountered to that point said had to be.
Yeah.
And that's a very long answer to the question, but I really want to emphasize whether it's healing whether it's healing and health, healing and financial, or healing and emotional, any of that stuff has a belief that the healing has taken place, and the body then goes to match that.
Absolutely. And not coincidentally, Mira had sent this to me via instant message, or by Messenger, Facebook Messenger, and halfway through your answer, she actually logged onto the show here and asked her question again. So Mira, when the show is done, you want to go back and play the replay so you can hear Joel's complete answer. I love your answer, and I want to add a couple things. First of all, I'm so pleased to hear they're doing a placebo study showing what's so good about placebo. I've mentioned that a few times here on the podcast. My dear wish that the researchers would actually start treating placebo like it is a valuable medical tool. And I'm glad to hear they're actually doing that. So, that feels really good to hear that. And the other thing I wanted to mention is any of these approaches, which include placebo and which include, what some people may call quack medicine, any of them are LOA dependent, because if you believe that it's going to happen, then it's going to happen. If you believe you're going to heal, you're going to heal. Problem is, of course, we do have to deal with the real world, in which we're told so often that stuff is incurable, that you can't, you can't use mind power to cure myopia or astigmatism, or in my case, macular degeneration. Can't be done. And so we believe that. And so we can start off with the belief that, you know what? I believe that I'm healed. I believe that I'm healed. And we do that for, 5 minutes or 10 minutes or so. And then we go on with our lives. And in the back of our head, there's that little tape saying, that's not going to happen. We both know that's not going to happen. And so we just reverse the whole process. We don't realize that we're reversing the whole process, but that's exactly what we're doing. And that's why it's so difficult to do, because we're tapped into the real world. We're tapped in, hopefully, also to the spiritual world, but we're tapped into the real world. And as long as that's the case, we have to basically learn to screen stuff out that is getting in the way. And it's not always easy to do, but it's a worthwhile goal, that's for sure.
Yes. And one of the concepts that I have found most efficient is a combination of Eastern and Western medicine philosophy of law of attraction added to. But, work with a physician that says, okay, here's some science that support, here's what helps. I had a young man in the other day, and I quickly reversed his course. He said, I have a strep throat, and my doctor gave me antibiotics, but I'm going to cure my strep throat with the law of attraction. I said, here's some water and take the antibiotics. Let's not be stupid. Mm-hmm. The same concept takes place. We don't want to, there's a remedy that we know is effective. I'm not in favor of antibiotics, but if you have something like a strep throat, which could turn into much worse stuff, of course take antibiotics. Of course, you figure out where you're at. We're not by any means saying shun what the doctors are saying.
Right.
But believe, also discount doctors who tell you that your mindset has no value in this equation. That's wrong too. There's where I think most people get it wrong. There's a gentleman, I can't think of the name of the book, but he wrote a book about natural cures, and he actually espoused the concept of ignore your doctors and do this.
Yeah, that
doesn't
work.
After the lawsuits were done, for those people that died, he's penniless. And if he would have just simply said, what I'm suggesting is an adjunct to what's happening.
Yeah.
Again, I don't, like with hypnotherapy, I've had a couple of doctors, I'm working on getting my finally certified in all my hours of hypnotherapy. Well, I have a lot of doctors that are excited of the concept because they want to use hypnotherapy in conjunction with regular Western medicine treatment.
Cool.
Because all studies point to those are the two solutions together that have by far the greatest success rate.
Absolutely. And by the way, one of our listeners, Beth Ann, posted something that I thought was a good contribution. She says, healing myself with the law of attraction is something I've been doing for years, but I didn't know it. I called it self-talk. But it's a fact that anyone can do that. And literally, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about talking to yourself and talking to yourself in a healing way.
Yes. And that is such and I'm so glad she shared that, because what we tell ourselves is our reality. And the law of attraction is self-talk. It's inner dialogue. It's what we really believe on a subconscious level that works. And that was, the greatest gift. I'm watching, I often talk of one of my Facebook posts, and I love people's reaction, because it's one of the things that I'm not seeking your reaction when I do it, but I'm trying to demonstrate sort of how a reframing process can help, and how your inner dialogue is so important. One of my Facebook posts this morning, I was talking originally in 2011 on Facebook. I posted a Napoleon Hill quote saying, every failure brings with it the seed of an equivalent success.
Right.
And I posted that without commentary in 2011. Well, it popped up today on my memories at Facebook.
Yeah.
And so I added this statement. I originally posted this in 2011. Since then, I have failed countless times, and if I keep working hard enough, I will continue to fail my way to even more success. That really frustrates a lot of people because they're not understanding my context. I have redefined failure.
Absolutely.
Failure is a redefinition for me. Failure is a positive growth mindset. Failure is a growth mindset when I view it that way. Or failure is completely defeating. Either way, it doesn't matter. Either way. Mm-hmm. It's just what you put out there is how you choose it. And failure is a catapulting event. It is a trauma, a move forward, a growth, or it's a debilitating event. And the only thing that matters is your view of that. So healing is that exactly what was stated, that inner thought, that daily thought. We don't have time to, in a sense, not be healed. When you're living that life of fulfillment and you're getting up every day, being sick, I don't really have time. Now that I'm thinking about it, I really don't have time to be sick. I'm busy. I'm doing that. And then all of a sudden, when you start thinking about it, I've always been amazed at when I used to run a residential treatment facility, people would come into recovery and they had been practicing addictive behavior for years sometimes. And they almost always got sick. I called it the recovery flu. And I was baffled by what that was. Well, their addiction was occupying so much time. They didn't have time to be sick. And then when they slowed down, body's like worn out. So, oh, okay, now we can do that.
Ah.
And it was fascinating to watch happen. But it's just this belief of that true belief. I shared the story of my friend in Florida who, and I'll tell it very briefly because it hasn't been long since I told it, but it's a husband and wife, and I'm really, really good friends with this gentleman, and he's a Spartan racing guy, one of these super high-end athletes, a very successful businessman. And so she calls and tells me that her husband, my friend, we'll call him John so it's easier that way.
Sure.
She told me that John had had a very bad diagnosis from the doctor on a Friday.
Ooh.
And I was shocked to hear that. He said he had liver cancer.
Ugh.
And I was like, oh my gosh. I said, this is a really good friend. I was like, oh, wow. Well, I said, I'm coming down. And she said, it would really be good if you could get down here and see him. And I couldn't get down there for about a week.
Oh, wow.
And so I get down there on literally Thursday or Friday, almost a week after I'd gotten the call and since he got the diagnosis. And I was shocked at what I saw, Walt. Mm. I saw a man that he was lost in that week had lost like quite a bit of weight. And I forget the number, but it's quite, and he wasn't overweight. So he had lost quite a bit of weight.
Yeah.
He looked frail. He looked gray.
Oh.
And he looked like he was dying.
Oh my God.
And I was devastated. Yeah. And again, this is somebody that I just could not imagine.
Yeah.
And, so we, you know, I'm talking, I said, you know, they had a doctor's appointment the following Monday. And I just, you know, I said, have you been getting to the gym? No, I just have no energy. I have nothing to do. And he just was, the disease was killing him, quickly. And, so we had a doctor's appointment on Monday and it was a 9 o'clock appointment. And I said, please call me the moment you hear. I just need to know. We're going to keep positive thought. We're going to, you know, and so by 4 o'clock Monday, I didn't know what had happened. And so finally I get a call and his wife said, we don't know what happened. I said, well, tell me the story. And, you know, she said, well, we went in there and the doctor, you know, they originally had a blood work. And I forget which one, a blood work that was leading to the CAT scan thing that was going to recommend what course of action for. But the marker for liver cancer was there. It was the blood work that did it. So they get into the doctor, and the doctor ordered either, I'm sure it was a CAT scan, and he came back and he ordered another one, and then he came back and he ordered some other imaging thing. There was four or five imaging things that took place that day.
Wow.
And finally she got frustrated and said, what are you doing? He goes, I don't know what happened, but your husband doesn't have liver cancer. In fact, I ran the blood work again. There's nothing there. All I can say is there must have been a blood mix-up or something.
Wow.
He's fine. And so I got on the phone with him, and I now I know he's going to be okay, so I can't use the language I use with him, but I motivated him in a very direct manner.
Right.
To get up, eat some food and get it. Do not go home. Go straight to the gym. And the next day, his wife called and said, you know, other than the weight, he hadn't gained it all back on it.
Yeah.
But instantly after he got back from the gym, his color was back.
Oh.
He was back to himself. And the point of the story, Walt, and there isn't a healing that took place. I believe there was a blood mix up. I don't think he was healed in a week. He didn't have the mindset to be healed. But
yeah.
I will show you where his mind was killing him.
Yes.
Because he believed he had that.
Yes.
And so using logic, if your mind can kill you that way, your mind can heal you that way.
Absolutely. Absolutely true. Yeah. And that's a really good thing to remember. Yeah. It shows just how important our mindset is. We tend to think of law of attraction application, being a deliberate creator, as something that you do for 10 minutes in the morning. And your story illustrates we need to be deliberate creators 24 hours a day. Well, not 24 hours a day, but 12 hours a day, all the time that we're awake. And then allow our sleep period to be the period of relaxation where we just naturally fall into a non-resistant state anyway, as Abraham has told us. And that story just really illustrates it. We need to learn to essentially become intent focusers. And in
yes.
fact, what you were describing primarily with the earlier story was it's what Neville Goddard, Cindy Chavez and I have been doing a lot of Neville Goddard work lately. And the main concept that it makes me think of from Neville's work is what he calls the pruning shears of revision, meaning you take your situation that you don't like that's holding you back. You know, maybe it's a memory, maybe it's a past experience, some sort of trauma, and then you change it in your mind, which is exactly what you've done in your own life many times. You were talking just a few minutes ago about how you just don't see troubles the same way other people do. I don't remember what the exact word was that you used, but you don't see things the same way. You don't experience things the same way. You don't see what some people would say to be a bad situation as a bad situation. You just see it as the next step on your journey. You can take a completely different view of it. You apply what Neville calls the pruning shears of revision. You change the story in your mind and turn it into what you want it to
yeah.
be and what you need it to be, instead of whatever the detrimental thing is that could be holding you back. And the same
yeah.
thing happens with your friend, or happened with your friend. I mean, he had been given what he thought was a death sentence, and so he carried it out. Because
yeah.
he was basically telling himself the story that was actually not true. It was not the true story, but because he believed it, he made it true for himself, or as close as he could before the doctors intervened and said, wait a minute, we screwed up here. Sorry, you don't really actually have liver cancer.
Yeah, and that process of thinking, I remember for me one time, that this is in a healing story that I found interesting. I was in South Carolina running a treatment center there. It was very early in my recovery. I just got in recovery, just became a counselor.
Mm-hmm.
And the previous 10 years of my life had been stuck in a downward addictive spiral, and I had been pulling myself up. So I was starting. One of the things that gets neglected is your health when you're in addiction. You just don't go to the doctor.
Right.
You don't do anything. So I and this is before my law of attraction stuff was tuned in. I don't go to doctors for different reasons now, but back then the logic was you would go see a doctor and get a checkup. So I felt fine, but I went to see the doctor and they do blood tests and they do everything, and then they do a urine test.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't, I never knew anything. I never paid any attention to my health at all. I've always been in great health. So I get a call, I mean, almost within, I don't know, 20 minutes of getting home, the doctor would like to speak with you. And I'm like, God, that's weird. And, he said, there's blood in your urine. And I'm very concerned. That could only mean one of three or four things. And I'm like, wow, I've never thought about that. He said, I want you to have this procedure. It's called an IVP. It's where they put a dye into your bladder and kidneys, and they follow it. They try to figure out where the blood's leaking.
Right.
And it's microscopic blood. So you don't see it. It isn't like there's red in the toilet. It's just a microscopic amount of blood.
Right.
They call it a microscopic hematura.
Mm-hmm.
So make a long story short, I scheduled it up. I didn't have the money and didn't have insurance at the time, so my family agreed to obviously pay for that. When I called my mom, though, to explain it, she said, well, son, she said, I don't think it's going to be anything. When you were a little kid, the same thing happened, and we took you to the hospital, and they said that there's a certain percentage of the people, and for no explanation, they have microscopic blood cells in their urine, there's zero cause. They can't identify it.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, but please have the test done because we want you to make sure that that's not a problem.
Right.
So the doctor, and I explained that to the doctor, and he goes, no, I've heard of those cases, but I've never seen one. I want to find out where. So he does it, and he comes back with the same conclusion. He said, there's nothing wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
He said, everything's intact. You're in great health. He said, I've heard of these. I've just never seen one, but there is. You're going to have microscopic that nobody can see until they look at it under a microscope. And then they're going to always, so every time, anywhere that I give a urine sample, I tell them ahead of time, where that takes place. But the point of all of that story is the night in between him telling me I had blood in my urine and me going to have that test the next day, and before I spoke with my mother, my kidneys hurt really bad.
Yeah.
I kept saying, oh, that back pain isn't back pain.
Mm.
No, I'm deadlifting 450 pounds is why my back hurts, but I turned that into my kidneys are hurting. It's like, wait a minute. No. You're looking for – so I plugged that in and allowed that thought, Walt, to create that pain.
Yes.
And that was such an incredibly awakening experience. Now, again, that's part of the journey that led me – that's one of the things that happened to help me understand how my mind, that inner dialogue that had been mentioned, that self-talk, is so relevant to your health.
Mm-hmm.
When you are anticipating being sick, you're going to be sick. When you're anticipating health, you're going to be healthy. And it's just like money. The gentleman that wrote a few weeks ago that was talking about how the law of attraction was working in every area of his life that party was focused on.
Right.
I love that. One of the great emails we've ever received.
Absolutely.
It puts it in great perspective. How do you not focus on something that you believe is like my friend that, you know, he couldn't stop focusing on it and it was killing him.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's incredible. And you see that connection. Now we're putting things back together and you start to build the health. And that's why I like, you know, the supporting stuff as well as the healing process. When I'm working with clients, I encourage them to research any natural remedies that's shown to help with their condition. They have to do the research. I can point them like the castor oil and say, I want you to research that. I can't prescribe anything, but same with the audience. If you have something like going on, look at it. But then combine that with the vision of healing, the vision of all that, and it will get there. And if your doctor says, you know, like sometimes if you go to the emergency, your appendix is about to burst, please don't law of attraction that back to health. Please get that thing taken out. Don't, you know, let's don't be ridiculous. But there is a combination of the two that makes the most sense, and that's what we have to look at. We got to find that balance, and sometimes the remedies that doctors offer have more of a placebo effect. I've had this discussion a lot lately because one of the big topics that keeps popping up in mental health and addiction especially right lately is the role of trauma in our lives. And we've mentioned to you before, this will, you know, any therapist, you know, please notify, you know, contact Walt at LOA today if you don't agree with this.
Thank you so much. It's nice to know you're in my corner.
No problem. We'll just filter that, and he'll forward those to me if he feels necessary. But one of the things that is an effective remedy for people with post-traumatic stress syndrome is a technique, a rapid eye movement technique. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it has been deemed very successful in helping people deal with that. Where and this is a very much a layman's description, so before we get those emails about saying I described it wrong, it's a desensitizing process where the traumatic event or the anxiety-producing event or whatever you're going to be using this for is brought to the surface, and then there's a technique of moving the eyes rapidly back and forth or a certain way to sort of help desensitize you to that concept. And by redoing that over and over, you desensitize yourself to the trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's also a technique that late Dr. Wayne Dreyer used to use. It's called tapping. It's tapping on the certain meridians in the body that offers the same thing. Whatever's creating the anxiety or traumatic thought process, you tap the meridians of the body as you're thinking about it, and then the process is relieved, and you desensitize yourself to it.
Mm-hmm.
Neurofeedback uses a similar technique. There's several techniques. Well, the concept that works isn't necessarily the eye movement as much as believing the eye movement is desensitizing.
Oh.
That's the part that's working.
Interesting.
And of course the therapist said, oh no, there's proof.
Yeah.
Because the therapist, and I'm not trying to talk anybody out of using it.
No.
It's a great technique, but it's the therapist's belief in it and the person who's being treated's belief in the therapist that is the effective piece of this. Is the tapping has been proven to be just as successful. The neurofeedback is just as successful when you believe it's that successful.
That's really something.
Those are hard to accept concepts for a lot of people, but it really is.
You know, it's not hard for me, I can tell you, because I believe more and more in this placebo effect. And I'll repeat what I said earlier. I was so glad that you told us that they're doing this study that studies specifically the healing benefits of placebo, because I've been hoping for that for a long time. I really do believe there's going to be great stuff that comes out of that study. Maybe not immediately, because usually whenever some new study comes out that proposes something that kind of flies in the face of conventional wisdom, there's a lot of pushback and, you know, there's a lot of resistance and no, that can't possibly work and so forth. And then there are 25 follow-up studies and 24 of them verify that it's true. And then they say, well, okay, maybe there's something to it. So it's going to be a while perhaps for medical science to really catch up with it, but they're at least doing it. And that's the part that makes me excited, because now they're on the right track. They're on the right path. That's a really good thing. So, another message I got from, this is from Charlotte, who's from Uganda, and her English is a little bit broken. So I will try to do some translating where need be, in reading this to you. But this is one of those general questions about how to use the law of attraction and so forth. She says, first, thank you for what you are doing. I have two questions about manifestation. Do I manifest like I set a time aside like you do a prayer? You said you particularly do not use a vision board. That's something I've said. How then do you do it? Even if I say I'm grateful and I usually say affirmations to attract money and wealth, that is all I need to do to attract money? Another thing, if you are attracting money and you already set out to start a business, but the only thing you don't have is money, how do you manifest and don't think about where it will come from? Especially when you have people owing you money, you keep thinking, he is going to pay me, or so-and-so will give me, you know, the idea of not thinking about where it will come from can't leave my head. Another thing, when you have like many bills to pay or a lot you want to do and there is no money, overcoming the thoughts of lack and thinking like everything is good. How do I do that? She's asking. So it's a little bit rambly, but I think you get the gist of it. How would you answer her?
Well, it's so complicated and easy at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, setting aside time, like, how do I do it? Do I set aside time like a meditation?
Mm-hmm.
And you described it perfectly earlier. That's what we have to separate from. It isn't about setting a time for a meditation. While that could be a really awesome way to add to it.
Sure.
The piece that you have to accept is it has to become a way of life, a thought process of life, not for 60 minutes during a day. When the hard part of it is when you quit worrying about it and believing it is when it's real. When you're focused on people owing you money, you're basically you're basically putting yourself in that desperate mindset. I don't know why this happens. I very seldom have trouble collecting money from people who owe me money. Mm-hmm. A lot of my families will pay me online. Some families prefer to let it build up to two or three sessions, and I always allow that. I don't like the concept of having, especially when working with their teenage kid, I don't like the idea of the kid having to bring a check every time.
Right.
So I'll build a family afterwards in one of, 15 different ways, whatever they prefer. And so, it might be two or three sessions and then they'll pay me. And I've never had anyone not pay me, with the exception of one or two people in all the years of practice. And I'll just let it go. I'll never chase everybody. But what the piece that I find interesting is, say, for example, I have seven or eight outstanding invoices, and it's without me, I never second bill anybody. I never push that. I sort of let it go. I do fine financially, so it's not a big problem. But like one day a payment will come in, and then 5 minutes later, another payment will come in. Then it almost like without prompting, they all happen at once. Now, what is going on with that?
Yeah.
It's just comes in waves, and it's almost like when I'm not thinking about it. And again, I'm not ever really thinking about it. So I'll reverse the question. How does each individual figure out how to make their priority not get their energy of thought, which is actually resistance there? It's a very hard thing to do. I think every individual has to go at it their other way.
Yeah.
Another way, the beauty of a vision board, she had mentioned vision board, and, or a similar technique, whether it's vision board or any of those, ways of bringing something to your reality, is getting your mind just focused on what you want versus not what you don't want.
Right.
When you're focused on I have an abundance. This is what I want. I want to live. There's some practitioners of the law of attraction that say you need to be super, super specific. And there's others that say you need to be more broad and general. Mm-hmm. I don't think that matters as much as they all say. I just think it's more of a mindset of, it sort of almost matches your personality.
Mm-hmm.
But what you can't expect abundance when you have no idea what abundance feels like. When you're viewing people owing you money and needing money, you're focused on a lack.
Yes.
I'm lacking the money that's due me versus that money's already mine. It just hasn't been transferred to my account yet. It's already mine. I've already earned it. It's already mine.
Exactly.
It's just not in my account yet.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that what you're saying there reminds me of an exchange I had with somebody else on Facebook. They were asking essentially, I've been told by many people that I'm supposed to ask for something and then forget about it. How do I forget about it? And why am I even doing this? And it goes basically to what Abraham has told us and what you just referred to. You alluded to the idea of lack. Abraham calls it the lack end of the stick. And when we're asking for something, it's because we don't have it. But the ironic part about it is when we don't have it, we feel like, well, I don't really have it, which means we're on the lack end of the stick. And so the strategy that many people use is to get themselves all excited about the thing, put it out there that they want it, and then distract themselves and not think about it anymore, because at least they've got a positive impulse out there that they're no longer blocking with all their fears about, oh, it's not going to show up, or I don't have it right now, or whatever. And that's where that method that people use comes from. And it's a fine method. I mean, if it works for you, then great, go ahead and do that. But to me, it's more interesting and useful to know why people use that method and why they found it to be effective, because then you can decide for yourself, is that one that works for you? You mentioned that right. Vision boards can be very effective, and they certainly can be. I mean, I've said that they aren't effective for me, so I don't use them, but that just means that's me. That's just what doesn't work for me. Doesn't mean it's not going to work for somebody else. It can. It just comes down to what works for you, what feels good for you. What's it going to take for you to get into the place of believing that you actually have the thing rather than that you lack the thing? That's the way I look at it anyway.
And that's what the law of it, the feeling, the vibration of abundance is. You got to put that out there that you have When I say this, this is not condescending to anyone or any. It is a very hard thing to do in the beginning, especially. Mm-hmm. Trust me, I've eaten out of a trash can. It's hard to view yourself being homeless and eating out of a trash can of having an abundance. It's hard to do that.
It's unbelievable.
I would virtually say it's impossible to do that at that point.
Yeah.
But there are techniques to work your way incrementally out. Mm-hmm. So when you're in a business and you're making money and, you know, like, do I, like her question of, do I do it 60 minutes a day? Do I do it with meditation? Her focus is clearly on the lack of money. So by how does she, in her own individual way, when she looks out the window, what does she see of where she lives? Is it what she is dreaming of, or is it what she doesn't want? And again, it's either, is how she chooses to do it. She's in business. She obviously has a successful business because people are paying her money to do stuff. Is that business a success? It is if she believes it, or if it's the trouble collecting, that her business is not successful, not for any other reason than that's her belief process that's interfering. So it isn't about how to manifest. It's how not to get in your way. You're manifesting no matter what. So let's stop. How do I manifest? Well, you're already doing it.
Mm-hmm.
The key is what frequency are you tuned into? If I'm tuned into, you know, I use the radio analogy a lot.
Right.
If I want to listen to the radio station I listen to in Richmond, it's 102.1. And I can go to 103.4 and I can be close, but I'm not tuned into the frequency I want. So I will not get the programming that I'm desiring.
Right.
So I have to find the frequency of abundance. And once I found that frequency of abundance, money is not a thing anymore. It's not a, and I don't say that with arrogance. It is a lack of money is not a thing in my world anymore. I have all I need. I don't know exactly how much I have, but at the same time, I have plenty. I get more. I just want to be in that mindset all the time of feeling that abundance because I can't attract anything but what I really feel.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way it works. I'm excited that I'm able to do it. And it took me a long time to get there because I lived with my focus of lack for so long that was the hardest place to break. Now, like I was saying in my health, I always knew I was healthy. Okay, no matter what, even when I hear something like, you have blood in your urine, that's no big deal. And it wasn't. Once I realized what it was, if I go to the doctor today, there'll be microscopic blood in my urine. It doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah, actually, I have a similar situation in that my family it's not an issue, it's just a normal thing for us, thing called bilirubins. If you, typically if a doctor or even just a layperson sees somebody with like yellowish skin, they get all concerned that there may be a liver problem there because when a liver acts up, one of the first things you see is discoloration in the skin. So you get like a yellow or an orangey color. Well, I get that all the time, and it's because my family, for whatever reason, puts out these bilirubins, and they add the color to his skin. Does that mean there's something wrong with my liver? Absolutely not. My liver is perfectly healthy, but there's just some quirk that my family has in their genetic makeup. I'm not sure exactly why, but we do. So, you know, you don't let it bother you. You just move on. You don't even think about it. I didn't even know about it for the first 30 years of my life, to be perfectly honest. I had no idea.
Right. Yeah, it was one of the things that my son Chris years ago, he was outside playing, and him and a buddy were building a fort or something. I went out there, and he had a cut on his leg. Well, he didn't know he had a cut on his leg until I said, "Oh, son, you're bleeding. I need to get you a Band-Aid and just put some on it so it doesn't get infected." Then Oh my! Drama ensued, pain ensued. A lot of stuff took place because, all of a sudden he had a cut. Now he didn't know of the cut before. This is important to understand. The pain didn't happen until he realized there should be pain.
Yes,
he didn't even know it.
That's right.
There are people that were in situations that have been shot, and they get home before they realize they've been shot. It's
crazy. Again, it sounds impossible, but it's true. it's just one of those things.
And so when we look at that, it, to me, it's exciting. It helps reinforce to me what an incredible life we've been given, a body, this way to heal itself and to avoid, we have a secret to avoid so much of the stuff we don't want by not focusing on the stuff we don't want. And that's such a counterintuitive message that we walk around having a hard time tuning in. But once we get it, that's why it seems so so exciting to people, because once you really figure out how to do this, there's zero limits to anything in your life. And that's why we do this show. That's why I do this show every week. It sounds so ridiculous.
It does.
Because it's so easy, but yet it operates on such a hard level. It's so hard to deal with.
Yeah, no,
and it's
that's
true. Back and forth that makes the difference.
Hey, you mentioned Dr. Wayne Dyer a few minutes ago, and he was a very prolific writer of books and so forth. Have you ever heard the conversation between him and Abraham? There's a recording of that. Have you heard that one?
I've read about it. I've never actually heard it.
Oh, okay. Because I was listening to it over the last couple of days, and it's a fascinating conversation. It's like going to a heavyweight fight and wondering who's going to win the fight, because you got these two superpowers in the realm of law of attraction battling it out. And quite honestly, I have to award the knockout to Abraham, because they were clearly in control of the fight the whole time. But no, seriously, it was a fascinating conversation. And one of the things that really caught my attention was apparently Dr. Dyer contracted leukemia and ultimately succumbed to leukemia. That's why he died a few years back. During the conversation, he mentioned that he had been diagnosed with leukemia, and he had gone to he had heard about this guy from Brazil who was a healer who goes under the name John of God, I think it is, and had gone to this guy to get a healing. And this is a guy who's been, you talked about the importance of combining Western and Eastern. And, well, this is a guy who hadn't done that, and he'd done some pretty strange things too. But most of what he was doing was energetic. And because of the strange things he'd done, he's been under investigations and he's been sued and all this other kind of thing. But Dyer went in order to see if he could get a healing from the guy. And apparently when he came away from the healing, he was absolutely blown away, because his literal view of life as he was experiencing it at that moment shifted dramatically. He was in this really high energy state. Everything looked like 20 times more beautiful. I mean, he was just finding himself appreciating everything that was around him. He'd see the sea, he'd see the mountains, he'd see the trees, he'd see everything. It was like all gorgeous, surrounded by auras and all this. I mean, he was just absolutely amazed at how powerful the whole thing was. And he didn't say it directly, but he kind of inferred that he had been healed from it. You know, that the healing had actually worked. And Abraham said, well, what really happened was he helped you to let go of all your resistance. You know, all the resistance was now gone. So now you were enjoying the bliss of just being in a perfectly joyous, happy state. And yes, that's where you can do a lot of healing. But like I said, he ultimately succumbed to the leukemia. So that raises the question, why did he succumb to the leukemia? And I think this actually goes back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago. The fact is, you have to be able to maintain it. You have to have the mindset. Because if you don't, you're going to slip right back into the old thought pattern again. And I suspect that's what he did. I suspect he fell back into the old thought pattern. He recontracted the disease, and ultimately it took him. That's my opinion. I don't know what you think about it. But
well, I would think it would be something along those lines. And you know, the idea that, you know, we're going to die on this physical body. And I guess that's only because that's what we're going to do. I mean, again, it's a belief process that takes place. So, you know, we all eventually have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Until somebody does differently, like Roger Bannister, then we're going to keep
yeah, right.
into that pattern of somebody doing that. So, you know, the idea that probably, you know, he lived, what's the argument? Was he cured for it? Because he lived for many, many years after he was diagnosed, and mm-hmm. lived very healthy, a very full life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I certainly had a great life. Or did he, what was the place? And I, again, whether he fell back into it or it never went away, it's the belief that matters more than what the end game was. He was going to die of something. How old was he? Do you remember? I don't remember.
He was in his 70s. I don't remember exactly. Yeah. I'm not sure exactly how old, but he was in his 70s, I believe.
Well, and also I do believe, because I had heard one of his, I found it interesting. I happened to listen to one of his talks probably about 2 days before he passed away.
Mm.
And this was a recorded talk, and this was before. And so I remember when he passed away, I was like, oh my God, I just listened to his stuff. And he basically, this was years before, but he was talking about this, and he said, well, I don't know. He said, I can imagine a time where I have lived enough here and look forward to that next level, that next plane.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember him, and that struck me as like, were you wanting, and he was clear, he said, I don't want to die, but I am saying that there would be a point of, okay, I've sort of run this course out, let's see what's next. And so I don't know that was just a convenient way when he, quote unquote, lived enough to do all that. Then he stepped back and said, okay, now it's a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And that just was the most convenient way to release the physical body, or at least the energy part back to the force, or whatever term you want to use, or
right,
whatever your system of belief puts in place. So I don't have an answer, but I do know that I'm focusing on the quality of life he lived from the time he was diagnosed until he passed away.
Exactly.
That was the cured portion of that.
Yes.
I believe he was cured during that period of time.
I think you're right. And you're right. That's the better way to look at it. I completely agree with you. One other message that I wanted to pass along that I received, this is from Alexis. And Alexis said, I'm a huge fan of all the amazing LOA work you do. Your podcast has introduced me to LOA. For that, I sincerely thank you. Throughout your podcast, I discovered Joel, and he has been a beacon of light and inspiration for me. I was hoping that you would be able to send me a link to the LOA group, which I've done. I can't seem to find it. I'd absolutely love to chime in on some of your live shows. You've started a stream on Facebook. Once again, you're truly amazing for starting this podcast, and I truly thank you. And I just want to say thank you, Alexis. I mean, I thanked her privately, but I want to thank her publicly because I love getting emails like that. This was a text message, but you know, same thing. I just love those. And she mentioned you in it, so I wanted to make sure you heard it too.
Well, I happen to know Alexis, and she is an incredible practitioner of the law of attraction. I have witnessed miracles in her life, and I would love for her to be on the show with us one day.
That'd be great.
Well, I'm not in a position to share her miracles, but she would be able to.
Yeah.
She is just an amazing person that I've watched just drastically make changes in her belief system, and it's paying off hugely in her life.
That's fantastic. We only have a minute or so left, but I want to make sure I get in there. If you're not a subscriber yet, you know, become a subscriber, because you can see we talk about a lot of good stuff and people have been getting good stuff out of it. The instructions on how to do it, there are usually links now in most of the podcast descriptions wherever we're posting this stuff. But in case you can't find the links there, or maybe we just forgot to put one in, go to the homepage of our website at loatoday.net and you'll find links for Android device users and links for Apple device users. Just click the right one for you and it'll just walk you right through the process. And then once you're a subscriber, make sure you're listening to all the episodes. We're doing a lot of them every week, and that way you can stay on top of all the latest news and insights and ideas and approaches and answers to questions and so forth. And then share the fact that you've been listening on social media, in your favorite Facebook or Instagram or, you know, Twitter or LinkedIn or Reddit or whatever you're using. You know, share the fact that you're listening, because chances are that's how you found out about it. Somebody shared it. You found out because they shared it. And aren't you grateful to them for having done that? Well, you know, pass it along, because that's how more and more people find about their daily dose of happy. And Joel, it's been great. I am so glad we had this conversation. I look forward to talking to you next week.
You too, my friend. Thank you.
All right. We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.